welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. My name is Warren Maynard. I am the dog. With me is Mark Schmore. He is the duck. And boy, 1 week can turn things around a little bit. The Huskies now are 5-2, coming off of a win against Arizona at home. The Oregon Ducks enjoyed their bye week and are in full preparation mode for a clash of the Titans between the 5-1 Ducks and the 6-0 UCLA Bruins. So, Mark, let's get into it. How are you doing, my friend?
Warren, I am as excited for the Oregon football season as I've been all year. I mean, coming off of a bye, I've just been, you know, twiddling my thumbs. Let me tell you, spending all day Saturday, spending 6 hours watching an 18-hour baseball game when your college football team is not playing is not the ideal way to spend a free Saturday. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up because that was fun. We went to the Husky game on Saturday. The Mariner game started in Seattle on Saturday at 1 p.m. Husky game started in Seattle at 2:30 p.m. So there's already a lot of traffic, a lot of buzz in the city. So we're driving in to the game. We're technically riding in on the bus. And, you know, everybody's got their phone out. They're keeping an eye on the scores. You know, my buddy has, you know, got his phone running. And, you know, the first quarter of the game is going on. And we're getting into, like, the bottom seventh or eighth innings. It's tie game 0-0-0. Second quarter, same thing. My buddy's like, man, I've only got like 18% of battery charge left on my phone.
Right.
You know, we get to halftime, like, surely this game is almost over, right? Nope. Third quarter, my buddy's phone dies. So then I take over keeping track of the Mariners on my phone. Fourth quarter, still going.
Yeah.
Game is over.
Yeah.
Husky fans are filing out of the stadium with their phone in their hands, watching the results of the Mariners game. We get on the bus.
Yep.
All the way home on the bus, we're watching this game. I get in my car. I turn on the radio. I drive home. I walk into my living room, and it's the top of the 17th inning, and you know, I watched the last two innings at home. I can't remember a single time in my lifetime when a game like that with so much importance lasted literally all day long.
Yeah. And I shouldn't give the impression like I was sitting on my couch for those 6 hours. I also went to a college football game during that time span. I went to see my alma mater, the Whitworth Pirates, play the Pacific Lutheran Lutes down in Puyallup. Went with a buddy who has a son at PLU. And so we went to the entire game there, which started at the same time the Mariner game started. Then we go to, you know, Red Robin for a meal afterwards. We're watching the game on the screen.
Yeah.
I drive from Puyallup back to my home in Kent. I meet up with my wife. We go grocery shopping. We come home. We have dinner. We put the baby through bath time and bedtime rituals. All of that takes place while the game is just lurking.
Going.
You know, and the game is still going, and I'm listening in the radio at different times, or I'm running in and I'm checking, you know, when we got a couple runners on base, I'm seeing how the at bat plays out. But yeah, it was literally, it was an all day affair where I think any, you know, kind of sports fan in the city of Seattle, if they were not actually in the stadium for those 6 hours, just kind of found themselves in some way tethered to that game while they're trying to live the rest of their life. And it was a heartbreaking way for the Mariners season to end, but certainly a memorable way for their season to end that we'll be talking about for a long, long time.
Yes, it was a very short postseason run, but some of the most memorable games in Seattle Mariners history. So you're absolutely right. Well, hey, let's talk about the Dogs and the Ducks. That is, of course, the name of this show. And the Dogs did come back. They won a wild one against the Wildcats at home, 49-39. the big story here, Mark, is Michael Penix Jr. continues his dominance as a record-breaking quarterback at the University of Washington. This week, he set the school record for passing yards with 516 yards passing in a game in which he also threw four touchdowns and ran for another, breaking Cody Pickett's 20-year-old record, and then also broke the record for total yards, which is one of the more iconic records in Washington Husky lore. It's the Tui 300-200 game, when he passed for 300-plus yards and rushed for another 200-plus yards against Stanford way back in the early 2000 era. And Penix broke that record as well with 529 total yards. This is the seventh game in a row in which he's passed for over 300 yards. Only Cody Pickett has matched that record. And he's the number one quarterback in the nation in terms of passing yards, number one in the Pac-12. And I mean, just putting up ridiculous monster numbers. And it's absolutely necessary. This is a team that is dependent on Michael Penix Jr. to be able to put up those numbers every single week to give us a chance to win with this current roster.
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly what we talked about last week, wasn't it? As we said, if you can you tell the offense, hey, we need 45 points tonight, and what did they end up with? 49.
49.
So that, I mean, they pretty much did exactly what we said they were going to have to do. And I guess now the question is how long will they have to do that? And how long can they keep up that kind of pace? It seemed like Arizona was a favorable matchup for them to do that. It'll be interesting against, you know, a Cal team that I think probably has a little stouter defense if they can keep playing at that level. But truly a memorable performance for Michael Penix.
Yeah, you know, and as I said, the Huskies put up 49. They gave up 39 points, which was really unheard of for the last 7 or 8 years under Chris Peterson and Jimmy Lake to give up that many points. But that's the Wild West that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
And the defense looked atrocious. The cornerbacks were out of position once again. And Jaden Delora just had a field day with this Husky defense. He threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns himself. You know, he was very elusive. The one saving grace was the Huskies were able to get four sacks on Delora and a couple of critical sacks at the end that stifled what would have been a drive that at least would have made it very uncomfortable in the final minutes. So we need to see more of that moving forward. But now Washington goes back on the road against Cal, a Cal team that, you know, over the years, they have been a thorn in the side for the Huskies, which seems to be a recurring theme week to week within the Pac-12. But this is a Cal team that honestly right now is not very good. They lost to Colorado this past weekend, a team that was, you know, clearly the worst team in the Pac-12 and one of the worst teams in FBS. So this is a team that I think the Huskies should have no trouble with. And yet it's still a Justin Wilcox coach team, a coach that many Oregon Duck fans were clamoring for just a few short months ago.
Yeah, I don't think you'd find a lot of Duck fans clamoring for him after the most recent outing. But I don't really know what to make of these last couple weeks for Cal, because they played the same Arizona team that the Huskies played a couple weeks ago and beat them 49-31. So also scored 49 points. That was coming off of, you know, their close loss to Notre Dame, which kind of put them on the radar of like, oh, they went toe-to-toe with Notre Dame. But then only 9 points scored against the Cougars, only 13 against a really bad Colorado team. And I know that they're mixing up their coaching staff, that Justin Wilcox went out and brought in Steve Greatwood, who was a longtime offensive line coach at Oregon, to come in as an offensive analyst to try to help, you know, generate some stuff for the offense. But it's been pretty puzzling how their offense has just kind of torpedoed. And I would think that could not come at a better time for the Huskies with some of the issues that they've been having in their secondary, because it does not look like the current version of California is well equipped to really, really test Washington in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for me heading into this Cal game, to me, there are three questions that will really define this game and potentially the rest of the season. And the first one, like we talked about last week, is can Penix play at an elite level on the road like he has at home? He's been good on the road, but flawed. He's been elite at home. And as a result, the Huskies are 5-0 at home, 0-2 on the road. You know, he's thrown for over 300 yards in both games on the road, but against UCLA, a few sacks and a couple of really costly interceptions. And then against Arizona State, that really deadly pick six that, you know, caromed off of an offensive lineman's helmet into the hands of an Arizona State defender. He ran it back for a touchdown. Ultimately, you could say that was the defining play of the game because we did lose by a touchdown. And I think this will be an opportunity to find out really what he'll be able to do against a good but not a great Cal defense. If he can avoid some of those mistakes and, you know, keep the offense moving, keep putting points on the board, I like our chances. But if he gets stymied, then it could be a long day for the Huskies.
Yeah, and in terms of you know, their defensive productivity, Cal is the second best defense in the league in terms of points per game. They're giving up just over 21 points a game. Only the Cougars of Washington State have a better number. The Huskies are right now the highest scoring offense in the conference. So it really is kind of a strength against strength there of this high-powered, high, you know, very potent offense that Washington's bringing in against the Cal D that I think throughout Wilcox's tenure has been at least competent. But I think my worry, if I was looking at this through a Cal perspective, is they're not going to pitch a shutout, you know, against Michael Penix and this group of receivers. So if they hold Washington to 35 instead of 45, is that necessarily going to be enough with the struggles that Cal's been having on offense? It certainly looks like Cal would have a hard time scoring, you know, in the high 20s, much less the 30s.
Agreed. And I think to me that, you know, kind of leads to the second question, which really comes down to, will the defense be able to regain some semblance of respect against really not an explosive Cal offense? And I think for me, one of the key storylines is going to be the fact that Cal quarterback Jack Plummer is not a mobile quarterback. And we saw what the Huskies were able to do against Tanner McKee, also not mobile. They put up 8 sacks against McKee. They did get 4 sacks against Delora, but he also just scrambled and gained so many first downs over the course of the game. It was just backbreaking. But if they can be in that 4 to 8 sack range, I think that's going to give them enough kind of series ending plays to keep, you know, Cal from putting up scores that will keep them in the running with the Dogs. So to me, I don't really expect that the Huskies are going to just completely thwart this Cal offense, but can they get the pressure and close in and make the tackle on Jack Plummer behind the line of scrimmage? And I think the flip side of that is really, will these young cornerbacks, and we've talked about this now the last couple of weeks, how, you know, bare thin this Husky defensive backfield really is right now, but are they going to get any better? They've been thrown into the wolves. They've gotten burned, but are they going to get better? And I think that's really where coaching has to come in. And I'm curious, are they going to make any schematic fixes? Are they coaching up some of these problems so that they don't continue? And maybe if we can just get through Cal, add on the bye week, and then coming back home to Oregon State, maybe that will be enough to kind of get our feet back underneath us in the backfield.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable hope, because I think even Oregon State coming out of the bye, you know, they're a very stout defensive team, but also not necessarily a prolific offensive team that's really going to, you know, stretch you down the field. So I think this is kind of a good stretch here, a 3-week stretch for Washington to try to piece some things together and figure some things out before kind of closing with a couple of their more tougher games with Oregon and Washington State.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about really the more compelling game of the week, and that is Oregon versus UCLA. I was very impressed with what I saw from UCLA when they played the Huskies. I saw a team that was complete. They were hungry. They were experienced in the most critical positions, that being quarterback, wide receiver, running back. They were getting pressure off of their edges with Le'Atu Latu and the Murphy twins. There was a lot to really be impressed by what Chip Kelly has put together with this UCLA team, something that I don't think either of us really expected at the beginning of the season, but they're on a roll right now.
Yeah, they're on a roll. And I think the win against Washington, I was impressed by them, but I also kind of chalked that up to, you know, sometimes weird things happen on a Friday night. Well, UCLA, I think, was hadn't really played anybody to that point in the season. And so they had a lot of time to really kind of over prepare for Washington. And so I kind of thought that was, well, that's the ceiling that we're going to see from UCLA. And I thought they would come back to earth a little bit when they had to play Utah. And the fact that they were able to beat Utah kind of just as convincingly as they'd taken care of Washington really sent a message to me that this team, you know, is to be seriously considered as one of the top contenders to win the conference. And right now, the way they stand, they're the only undefeated team left in the conference, with USC going down to Utah over the weekend. So they're a legit, right now, they seem to be a legit top 10 team with a legitimately potent offense that we've talked about on here, you know, for the last few weeks now. Mm-hmm. So I think it is, it's going to be a phenomenal test for Oregon, because this UCLA team is really clicking on all cylinders, and also, like the Ducks, coming off a bye, which means Chip Kelly's had 2 weeks in the lab to really think of some creative ways to attack the Oregon defense. And for any Oregon fan that enjoys now is an unsettling thought.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm a UCLA fan right now, I'm thinking, if we can get past Oregon this weekend, we're on the precipice of a very special season.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the remainder of their schedule after Oregon this weekend, they've got Stanford, which should be a very winnable game. They've got Arizona State, Arizona. Then, of course, they've got USC, but it's at home. And then they're on the road to finish up against California. And then, of course, assuming that they win, you know, all those games, they'll be in the Pac-12 championship game, and anything could happen at that moment. But it, again, if they get past Oregon, there's a good likelihood that they finish this regular season 10-1.
Yeah.
Which I don't think anybody in the UCLA Bruin world would have expected or complain about, you know, going into the season. So this is a huge game for UCLA. And I don't know if that portends to a greater level of effort and focus, or if it could, you know, lead to them, you know, getting too hyped up and not performing at their best. But it seems like both teams are going into this game really recognizing that this could be the most important game remaining on their schedule.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking for some sort of positive spin on it for Oregon in terms of this, the caliber of this game and what that means, I think the fact that it's at Autzen and the fact that UCLA has played five of their first six games at home in front of a sleepy Rose Bowl crowd.
Yeah.
The only road game they've had was against the Colorado team that was just in the middle of a tailspin at that point.
Right.
So UCLA has not had anything close to this kind of an environment that they've had to play in. And we're halfway through the season. You know, most teams by this point have gone on the road and have played in front of a real crowd a couple times and have kind of gotten those sorts of, you know, early season jitters out that sometimes happens the first time you play on a road. Think about, you know, Oregon going up to Washington State. Think about USC going to Oregon State. We've seen teams go on the road and not look fully like themselves in some of those moments. So if I'm trying to kind of frame it in some way that sees some sort of inherent advantage for Oregon, I think that's the thing that I would lean on the most, is that this is going to be new ground for this UCLA team. And that's not always easy to come into a hostile environment and just play as well as you've been playing kind of in the friendly confines of your own stadium.
And, you know, there's a difference when you are the hunter versus the hunted. And now you've got the Bruins as the more highly ranked team. They're coming in as number 9. Oregon's coming in at number 10. College game day is going to be in Eugene. You know, how do all those factors come into what these teams will actually produce on the field come Saturday?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, the game day aspect, because there's actually kind of an interesting history that Oregon and UCLA have as it relates to college game day. College game day first went live onto a campus, I think, in 1993 for a Florida State Notre Dame game. And then they started going to a few more games every season. It started to become a weekly thing a couple of years after that. But by 1998, they still had not visited a Pac-12 school. And I think they'd visited close to 20 schools by that point. They'd gone to Notre Dame 4 or 5 times by that point, and they still had not visited a Pac-12 school. And the first time they did it, they went down to the Rose Bowl, and it was an Oregon-UCLA game. The two quarterbacks at the time, Cade McNown and Akili Smith, and they exchanged in an epic duel. UCLA won in overtime, 41-38. It was the first overtime game that College Game Day had featured. And it kind of marked both Cade McNown and Akili Smith as high first round draft choices, neither of whom lived up to that billing in the NFL, but two really great college quarterbacks, and it was a great college football game. Then a couple of years go by, and the second time Game Day made its way out to the Pac-12 was also for an Oregon-UCLA game, this time in Eugene, and Oregon won that. They beat a top 10 UCLA team. Joey Harrington was the quarterback for Oregon at the time. So these two teams have kind of engaged in some kind of important clashes in terms of providing some really needed exposure to the West Coast and to Pac-10, Pac-12 football. And that was, you know, over 20 years ago that we're talking about those games that were played. So it is interesting to find them in this setting now. And the reason why I bring that up, Warren, is, you know, we've talked at length about Oregon's ability to attract recruits in a place where, you know, there's not a lot in Eugene necessarily to attract high level talent. There's not a lot of talent around the Eugene area that, you know, would be a natural fit there. you know, you've made the point several times that the connection with Nike is certainly a big selling point, and I would, you know, agree with that to a point. But I will, but I also think that these game day environments, when ESPN comes there and they spend 3 hours camped outside Autzen Stadium, and it's kind of a 3 hour commercial for the Oregon football program, and they've been on game day more than any other school in the Pac-12. They've hosted it now 11 times. This is their 11th time, which I think if you added up seven or eight different schools in the Pac-12 combined, the total is 11 times that they've hosted it. So these environments have been crucial to the development of the Oregon program, and they've done very well. They're 7-3 when they host game day. They're 5-0 when it's a top 10 matchup, when meaning both teams carry a top 10 record. And a lot of that is thanks to Chip Kelly. The first two of those 5-0 were when Kelly was an offensive coordinator. The next two were when he was a head coach. The last one was with all the players that he recruited and handed off to Mark Helfrich. So his fingerprints have been all over this. So many of the biggest games in recent Autzen Stadium history were games that he was coaching in. And now he is bringing an undefeated team in, the best team that he's had at UCLA. He is bringing them in, as you mentioned it, the heavyweight, the team with the higher ranking. And all of that just makes this such a compelling matchup for so many different reasons.
Absolutely. And these teams are obviously very closely ranked, and as a result, they're very evenly matched. So, Mark, we didn't prepare for this. But let me just do a little kind of a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah.
And just keep it very brief. You know, just imagine like the check mark. Okay. Yeah. So between the head coaches, who's got the advantage?
I would say UCLA. Okay. Just based on experience.
Yeah. And maybe I'll back up before we would talk about the head coaches. Who's got the advantage in terms of the field and location?
Oregon.
Clearly Oregon, right? Okay. So Oregon's got a check. UCLA's got a check. What about a quarterback? This is a little bit of a trickier one. Bo Nix is playing fantastic. DTR, fifth year with Chip Kelly, finally seems to be kind of, putting all of that talent on the field. Who do you give the advantage to?
Yeah, I'd say both guys have kind of reached a ceiling that I didn't know was possible for either of them, but I would say DTR has been better. I mean, he's been slightly better, but he's been better.
Okay. All right. What about at running back? You got Charbonnet, but then you've got a cadre of running backs at Oregon who have been very effective as well.
I'm going to say Oregon, and because it's strength in numbers. I think UCLA behind Charbonnet does not have depth, whereas I think Oregon, if in terms of yards per carry, Bucky Irving is averaging more yards per carry than Charbonnet. Noah Whittington is averaging more yards per carry than Travis Dye. Those are considered the two best running backs in the conference. But Oregon has two guys of that caliber that they're going to be giving the ball to a lot, and they have other guys that they can behind them. So I think that's actually a slight edge for Oregon just because of the depth.
Okay.
And
yeah,
well, no, we'll get there later, but yeah.
Let's go ahead and just for time's sake, pair together wide receiver, tight end. What do you think between Oregon and UCLA?
I really like Bobo for UCLA, but, I think that may be a draw. Like I think they've got pretty similarly skilled, you know, one of the best receivers for Oregon, Chase Cota, transfer from UCLA. Mm-hmm. So I think I'd call that one a draw. I don't have a good feeling on that necessarily.
Okay. And this could be the biggest factor is the offensive line.
I think that you have to say Oregon, or I think Oregon's now I think UCLA's got a great offensive line, but Oregon has, you know, they've given up one sack all year. They're opening up huge holes in the running game. You've got to say Oregon.
All right. So let's flip it over to the defensive side. Right now we're about even. I think we've got about three for UCLA, three for Oregon, and a draw in there on the defense. Let's just split it up into two segments, the defensive line, and then we'll talk about the defensive backfield. But on the defensive line, I already mentioned the Murphy twins plus Latu Latu. They're getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. What's your take on how they stack up compared to what Oregon brings to the table?
I think I would give this one a draw too. In terms of rush defense, they're the best two rush defenses in the Pac-12. One's giving up 98 yards a game, one's giving up 99 yards a game. I think Oregon's played better teams, so maybe I put a little more stock in their rush defense, but UCLA, I think, has a little better ability to pressure the quarterback. But I think that's pretty close to a draw.
Okay, and then the last component is the defensive backfield.
And I think this is a vulnerability with both teams, but I think it's a bigger vulnerability for the Ducks. The Ducks are last in the conference right now in passing yards per game. Some of that's being ahead late in games, but some of that is just that they've struggled to cover guys. And UCLA has shown some vulnerabilities there. We saw that in the second half with Penix and the Huskies moving the ball against them. We saw that at times with Utah. So I think that's it's a similar vulnerability, but I would say you would have to say it's a bigger vulnerability for the Ducks based on the way that they've played the first half of the season.
Okay, so it seems like, you know, if you were to kind of give a percentage, it seems like the advantage for UCLA is maybe at like 55% versus the advantage for Oregon at 45%. But then the question really is, how much influence does playing at home have on this equation? How much influence does Chip Kelly as the coach have on this equation? So let's just get right down to the brass tacks, Mark. What is your prediction for this game? For your Ducks, are they going to come out with a win and prove that they're the dominant force in the Pac-12, or is UCLA just on too much of a roll right now?
Yeah, I think I'm looking here at the history of it, Warren, and I'm seeing this 5-0 in top 10 matchups in Autzen Stadium. And with that as the track record, obviously at some point in time, they're going to lose one of those games. But until they do, I feel like I've got to keep going for the Ducks, just based on, you know, the recent history of playing in these caliber games at Autzen Stadium. Oregon has tended to show up pretty well. And like I said, I'm just not sure that this UCLA team has played in this kind of an environment and is going to be totally prepared for that. And so I think it's going to swing on some early things. I think Oregon's going to get a lead early. I think there might be some turnovers involved in that we're going to see a UCLA team that's just a little bit rattled to begin with. And I think that's, we're going to come back to that as the difference in the game. So I'm going to say high scoring, let's say 41-31 is the final.
41-31. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like your breakdown. I would probably agree with everything that you just said as far as, you know, who the advantage went to in each one of these things. And then the question is, what does it all add up to? And I think, you know, you make a great point. They're 5-0 against top 10 matchups. I know that's got to mean something, but at the same time, it's different kids, different coaches. So how much does it really mean? I don't know, other than just hearing that, you know, kids that came before you did something, and so now you believe you can do it as well. But I think because of Chip Kelly, I think he's probably got everything in his arsenal pointed towards winning this game. I'm going to go 35-32 UCLA. But man, if it turns out to be 41-31 Oregon, I would not be surprised at all, because I think everything you said makes perfect sense.
Well, and the thing that I would say is that the breakdown is very even across the board, and the strengths right. are very similar, and the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities are very similar. And like with Nix and DTR, these are two guys that I think coming into this year, it was kind of like, well, they have these moments, but like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't really want to trust them over a 12 game schedule.
Right.
And now, you know, DTR, I think, is like a legit Heisman candidate, and I wouldn't put Bo Nix in that conversation, but he's been as good as Oregon fans could have possibly hoped for over the last 5 weeks. And just, you know, going on down the board, it's like, it wouldn't surprise me if one of these things comes out as a decided advantage for either team. If you told me that Oregon ended up running for 275 yards and just wore down the Bruins, I would say it sounds about right. But if you told me also that this is the game where Oregon's defense gets cracked and Zach Charbonnet goes off and, you know, he has the big game, I could see it. Like, I could kind of foresee it. And even, you know, you asked me about the coaching matchup. And of course, you know, that's a tough question for Oregon fans. It's like comparing Dan Lanning through six games to right. Chip Kelly is a tough ask. But I would say that I've been as impressed with Kenny Dillingham as a new offensive coordinator as I was when Chip first took over as an offensive coordinator under Mike Bellotti. And it was like, hey, we've got an offensive coordinator that has a really good feel for the game. So, you know, you could talk into Chip having 2 weeks to prepare and just carving up the Oregon defense. But I think I'm equally confident that Oregon's offense is going to really have a good game plan just because of what we've seen out of them for the last several games. So I think it's going to be a fantastic matchup. I really do. And I think both teams are very, very evenly matched.
I agree. And, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, but I think is going to be a major factor in this game, and that is both quarterbacks' ability to run with the football in their hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just looking at these numbers right now. So Bo Nix has run for 331 yards and 8 touchdowns. Previous to this season, his best rushing season was 388 yards and 7 touchdowns, and that was over the course of 11 games. He's already right. run for 331 and 8 touchdowns in only 6 games. And then DTR, very similarly, has run for 231 yards thus far this season for 5.5 yards a carry and 4 touchdowns. And last year he did run for 609 yards. So he's actually a little bit behind that pace, but I think that's because he's been more successful passing thus far this season. He's already passed for 1,510 yards and let's see, and 15 touchdowns compared to Bo Nix, who has passed for also 1,526 yards and 12 touchdowns. So again, these guys are very evenly matched, but I think that running ability is going to really be a major factor in this game, converting third downs, but really just keeping the defense on their heels, knowing that they can't just pin back their ears and rush the quarterback and lose contain. Because if they do, both of these guys will make the opposing defense pay.
Yeah, that's absolutely been a storyline for both guys. And I mean, and they're the two most accurate passers in the Pac-12. On top of that, they're the only two passers right now in the Pac-12 over 70%. And I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of voting for the all Pac-12 quarterback, Warren. If you think about the season mm-hmm. the Penix is having, which is unbelievable, DTR is right now working his way into Heisman shortlist. You've still got Caleb Williams or Cam Rising could have a really strong close yep. to the season, you know, and Nix is kind of lurking around there. Right now I would put him fifth in that group, but I would say he's closer to like being second in that group than he is to being sixth or seventh on that list. Like, you know, like he's
yeah.
He's in that club as well. And so It's going to be really interesting because I think there's five guys that are really playing at a really high level.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think when you look at a guy like Jaden Delora, who, you know, like he's probably the sixth or seventh best quarterback in the Pac-12. And yet, man, he's doing amazing things. And the two top wide receivers are two of the top three or four wide receivers in the Pac-12 are at the University of Arizona.
Right.
Like we talked about a few weeks ago, I think this is one of the deepest quarterback classes that we've had in recent memory. And I mean, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Delora's already put up 2,274 yards passing, 19 touchdowns this season. And then has also, you know, rushed for an additional 65 yards and a touchdown. So again, there's just a lot of really gifted quarterback play right now in the Pac-12. And that's going to make these end of the season awards really difficult to, you know, I mean, it's like a third team all conference quarterback, maybe a guy that is also on the Doak Walker watch list.
Right.
You're
right.
Not Doak Walker, Davey O'Brien watch list. So, yeah.
Or it could be that the quarterback on the team that wins the Pac-12 isn't even on any of the all conference teams because, you know, he's edged out by a couple guys that have maybe a little better statistics, but his team ended up winning the game. So yeah, really, really going to be fun to kind of see all of those guys compete against one another over the last several weeks of the season.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up, and we'll be back next week to cover what happened between the Dogs and the Bears, the Bruins and the Ducks. But with that, Mark, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Just that Saturday can't get here soon enough, Warren. I'm really, really looking forward to this one.
What time is game time on Saturday?
It's a 12:30 start on Fox.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up. Thank you for watching and listening to the Dog and Duck Show. Please continue to support us by liking, subscribing, sharing, and telling all of your dog and duck friends. And with all that, I'll say to my dog fans, go Dogs.
And to the Duck fans, go Ducks.
All right, we'll catch you next time.